Hey, what's up to the Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris. You are going to enjoy this episode. In case you missed it, this is with Jim Abrams, the original HVAC GOAT, back when we had him on in August of 2022. This is a two-parter. You're going to absolutely love it. It is a banger. One of our most popular episodes in the history of To The Point Home Services podcasts. Before you listen to that, just another quick heads up. If you have not registered for the Home Service Freedom event with Tommy Mello and down in Orlando in November, do it right now and use Rhino20. That's R-Y-N-O-2-0 to save 20% on it. And also, do not forget to check out smartac.com going into Q4 into Q1 and see if how that can be applied to your business. You've got to check it out. If Gettle does it, maybe you should consider it. But enjoy this episode with my man, the GOAT, the greatest, Jim Abrams.
This is To The Point. A Rhino experience. Pull it one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
To the point, listeners, do we have a treat for you? This episode is going to be insane. You're going to get a great history lesson in the world of HVAC, plumbing, and electrical because our guest today is the founder of Clockworks Home Services, which is your 1 hour, Ben Franklin's and Mr. Sparky's, which was back in 1998, also, which was then acquired by Direct Energy in 2010 for $183 million. Is that right, Jim? $183 million. Yep. And then it acquired again by Authority Brands back in 2019. Also the co-founder of Contractor Success Group in 1990 with our friend and former podcast guest, Mr. Terry Nicholson, which was his episode was 88 and 92, and he spoke at Rhino X. And then he helped build the largest Weight Watchers franchise. And you were even a customer. That's like the best case study you got, right? Heck, makes you a great salesman. Yep. But wait, there's more. This man is considered an HVAC industry icon, the official GOAT. Multiple Entrepreneur of the Year awards, even though he says he's an accidental entrepreneur. The greatest residential service contractor in the world, the father of HVAC success, the franchise emperor, the prophet of prophets, the Pied Piper of plumbers, HVAC techs and electricians, the Dale Carnegie of HVAC success, and king of replacements. This man has shared wisdom to help contractors rise out of struggles, failures, depression, overcome hurdles to become multi-millionaires over his long four-plus decades in the industry. He coined the phrase home services, the most influential man in HVAC residential contracting history. Please welcome to the show the HVAC OG himself, Mr. Jim Abrams.
Well, thank you. That's quite an introduction.
How did I do?
Great.
Your face got a little red.
Yeah, well, I'm old now, so that happened.
Hey, you earned it. That was so much fun. I had so much fun writing that out. It was everything that I hoped it would be, so hopefully it made you feel good. You deserve that. So I'm grateful that you're on here, Jim.
Thank you.
So we just came off 4th of July weekend. I was just telling you, I was up in Colorado. Did you guys have a good 4th of July weekend, you and family? What did you guys do? Were you down in South Florida?
Yeah, we can legally shoot off fireworks here, and my wife's a pyromaniac, so we had a number of our grandchildren and children out at a beach resort that we own, and shot off fireworks there that night and had a great, great lunch, barbecue and everything.
So out over the water?
Yeah, shot it out off the beach over the water.
Yeah, those are so cool. Now, your dad served in World War II, right? He's a veteran.
Correct.
Very cool. Well, I want to just mention something to all of our listeners because, again, I really hope that you're paying attention. You have a pen and paper. You have whatever. Like, you're gonna want to take advantage of this podcast. I mean, there's no greater source. When I say the GOAT, I'm talking like the first GOAT in this industry. But this, ironically, is actually your first official podcast. So I'm grateful to be that for you.
Well, see, I was around before the internet was born. In fact, my son tells me, when I tell him the story that at Train Company, where I first started in the industry, that fax was the way to go. They found that utterly unbelievable that was new technology when I started.
Yeah, I mean, I got to read so many different articles. I was telling you, and like there, I had so many different directions I could go. You have so many stories. Like obviously, like been in the game for so long. There was so much stuff. And I went down a rabbit hole and I was like, okay, I got to just stop at some point. So I was up at like midnight last night editing and making things. So poor Matt, shout out to Matt for putting it together, was waiting on me to get questions over to you. But I think we got a good one here locked down. So I don't want to waste a bunch of time. I just want to kind of jump right into it so our listeners kind of get an idea. And for those who've actually never heard of Jim Abrams, I don't know necessarily what rock you've been under, but he is again, sharpen your pencil and start to take notes, because there's a wealth of knowledge on the show today. But I want you, Jim, if you would, just go ahead and tell us the Abrams impact story, like how you got into the trades, you know, to become considered the greatest residential service contractor in the world. That's a heck of a title.
Well, it was a long time ago. So it was back in the 1970s, and I was leaving Weight Watchers, where my boss's son was going to be taking my job. So I researched out there and found three things that I thought the future would be: something that would be energy related, cheap food, or automobile aftermarket. By default, nobody wanted to hire me in the automobile aftermarket or cheap food. So I ended up in the energy related business and went to work for the train company out of La Crosse, Wisconsin. I helped establish what they called their five saluting men. Wait, so the Train Comfort Corps, and we had a franchise and company owned operations.
Hey Jim, was that 1981 you did the train? We went to train?
No, 1981 was when I opened my own business.
Oh, that was home energy service. When did you go to train? When was that? Oh, that was
76. Got to start at the front end, ran a telemarketing room in those days, which was marketing for us in those days, became a straight commission salesperson, 1,800 people in the commission, in the division, and I worked my way up to the number one position at Train Consumer Products Division. Left there when I was asked to acquire the GE division of heating and air conditioning, which we successfully did in 1981. So I left and started my own business, which was Home Energy Savers. Picked St. Louis because it was hot in the summer and cold in the winter. So great, great demographics analysis, and moved my family to St. Louis. Started one-man business, hired one technician. In those days, yellow pages were key.
That's right.
They would put out the book in October, but they closed the book in March, and I didn't open my business to June. So I would not be in the yellow pages for the first 18 months. And that's why I had to default to foot canvassing, actually walking up and down the streets of St. Louis, knocking on doors.
Yeah, boy. And we're going to hit it on that story a little bit later too. But so that was 1981 when you started Home Energy Services.
Correct.
So then take me from there through the progress of that.
So ran Home Energy Savers not profitably for the first 2 years, which I knew would be by plan. But I started very small by 1988. So I started in 81. By 1988, I was the largest in the United States, not that big at that time, but I was doing $12 million in sales, all service and replacement by 1988. So it took me 7 years to grow a business from scratch to one that became the dominant player in St. Louis, and then also had a business in Sarasota, Florida. Morphed that into a company that became known as Service Experts, took that public to the NASDAQ in 1996. And to the New York Stock Exchange in 1997.
So was there like a point when you, was that the plan with it all along? Or
I had a long-term partner, John Young, in 1988. He and I we'd known each other at Train. John actually went to work for Ron Smith down in Fort Myers. Yep. Ron was in a lot of trouble at that time, mostly all commercial and industrial. John steered him over to residential and helped him recover dramatically. John decided to leave. We formed a partnership, which became Contractor Success Group. John was really a marketing guru in terms of direct mail, and my forte was operations.
Right, okay.
But so my plan, once we started the group, yes, in 1990, when we started the group, it was our intent to teach contractors across the United States a similar way of doing business, so that we could put them together and form the first publicly traded home services company.
You're the first consolidator.
Yes, in this industry, yes.
And right. Man, and so where was it at when you took it? What was the IPO on that when you took it?
We had $60 million under sales. Our market value upon the completion of the IPO was about $200 million. We grew it quickly to $1 billion by 1998 was the valuation of the company. And the company was approaching $800, $900 million in sales within 2 years of coming public.
Man, how did that feel?
It felt good and bad. I had unfortunately gone through a divorce just before doing that. So I was president of the company and I headed up all operations, but we had selected a different CEO. And my vision was branding residential home services. His was more about compilation of earnings and driving the stock value. And because he was CEO, I deferred to that. And I actually retired in 1997. My former partner, John Young, and I, our stock was worth approximately $100 million at that time. So I thought that was enough money. And I retired for a couple of years before starting Clockwork Home Services.
Yeah, but that was the first time. That was the first retirement.
That was my first retirement.
You've got a habit of retiring again. And I love hearing that.
I was younger. It got boring.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I wondered because, you know, at some point in time, you have the wealth or even the generational wealth that it's just part of the game or the fun of doing it and the building. I think it actually, I say, you know, I have this in my mind where I want to, you know, run as hard as I can to 50 years old. I'm 43. And then, maybe I'll semi-retire because I don't know that I have it in me. I am an entrepreneur. I don't know that I have it in me to not do anything, but I also think it's good for your brain and just to kind of keep you young by having to kind of keep doing things and work on stuff. Like, I don't want to sit. My grandpa was a farmer, a retired farmer, and he was active and like with golf and stuff, like all the things that you should do in retirement. He was a snowbird out here in Phoenix where I am. And then when he stopped doing all the things is when I started to see him deteriorate a little bit. And so I think kind of keeping yourself going and, you know, and sharp is helpful. But then it's you kept going.
Very hard to stop.
Yeah, it's addicting. Like you have it. It's its own. You know what? There needs to be a Entrepreneurs Anonymous. That's what there needs to be. Somebody's going to start that now. You watch. There may be one that exists already.
It may. Well, for me, I think I've shared this many times. I had, back when I was with Train, I watched a videotape that Vince Lombardi did. And from there, he concluded there was only three things that mattered in life: your relationship with God, your relationship with your family and community, and your relationship with your career. I bought into that. So once you're retired, there's a lot you can do, obviously, to enhance your relationship with God by giving to churches, et cetera. And there's always something you can do for the community. But that measurement of one's career kind of just stops. And invariably, that had been the most time-consuming prior to, because you're going to work every day, et cetera. So I think it's hard. I retired the first time at 50. I came, you know, my dad was an auto worker in Detroit, and I had what I thought all the money in the world at that time. And I was so bored. I created a talking thermostat at that time. I created a new pricing system, everything that would become part of Success Group International. Really, during my retirement, I got 4 patents, over 100 different trademarks during that period of time. So it was still active even when I was retired.
You know what's interesting about all this too is you're running national brands and with a fax. Like, it's just not like we have the technology today to be able to communicate. So you probably legit had to get on planes. And were you just gone like all the time? And that probably took a toll on the relationship.
Yeah, I think that's probably why my marriage did not succeed. Yes, I have cards with American with 2 million real miles on them and Delta with 2 million real miles on them, plus the other hundreds of thousands that I aggregated with no longer flying airlines, Eastern, TWA. United. Well, United's still flying, but it wasn't a hub city for me, so I didn't get that many miles. So I spent a lot of time in the air.
Yeah, because I mean, well, I appreciate you mentioning those three things. I think those are obviously like really key too. And this kind of leads me into, and it's not really on the questions we prepared for, but like this whole topic of like work life balance and is it a real thing? Is it not a real thing? To me, it's a real thing. I'm grateful that, you know, in 15 years of running Rhino, I ran really, really hard the first 8 years, like really hard before I actually realized, I'm need to work smarter, not harder. And I have a family, I have 4 kids. So, that to me really, and my wife is the COO of this business. So, but we've gotten a really good balance. And to me, it is important. I mean, you have to make sure like while you're building, yes, there's sacrifices that you have to make, but you don't make all the sacrifices. You got to balance that thing out.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. My 3 sons from my first marriage, All moved here to Sarasota. So I maintained over those years, because of the affluence that we gained, I'd say there was probably a month to 6 weeks off each year that I would diligently take. We would travel to different places. I would be there for their games and make sure that
that's good.
That would, so I have a great relationship with not only those three children, but when I remarried, I got two stepdaughters that were very young at the time. And one of them lives here. Both of them lived here at one time in Sarasota. One's now very high up with Apple, so she's got to be out on the West Coast. But and we have a home in L.A., so we get to see our kids that are out in L.A.
That's good.
We have two out in L.A. And yep, life's good.
Well,
right about the balance.
Well, and then you also, in this interim too, I think it was in, well, it published in 2008, but I'm sure it took a little bit to write it. But you also had your book that you had published. I think it was, or this was Contractor's Guide to Greatness. Was it published in 2018? I'm sure. Yeah, I think it was January. I think I'm pretty sure I saw that. I could be wrong though.
It had to be published back during my Clockwork days. So I sold Clockwork in 2010. So probably 2008, I think, would be more likely that book was published. We printed 10,000. They sold them all. I've seen resales on eBay, on eBay and on Amazon at very high prices.
I saw that.
Very flattering.
Like $5,000 or something like that.
Yeah, somebody paid $5,000 for one.
What in the heck, man? That's crazy. They should have sent it to you to sign it or something.
Well, I signed a whole bunch of books, so it was probably signed already.
Okay. Okay. Well, my goodness, if you're going to spend $5,000, I'll bet you that you would probably be willing to actually personalize it for them if they sent it to you. Holy crap.
I have no clue who bought it for that.
Well, and you have well, first off, let me ask a question. How long was that? How long did you take to actually write that?
So what happened was I actually did an audio call. So it was actually done initially over the phone. And each month, each week, I can't recall right now, but I gave a one chapter lesson audibly. We recorded that and then later went back and rewrote it. So it took a cumulative total of 30 months to do the whole program. So it was one lesson a month.
Got it.
So there were 30 specific chapters in there. It took 30 months. It probably took about another year to edit and rewrite the book because of the way I speak. A lot of oohs and ahs had to come out of there. That's words that were superfluous. So it took a while to edit it, and then we printed it. And fortunately, everybody wanted one, so the print went really quick.
Sorry for the interruption. To the point, listeners, have you heard of Rilla? Are you using Rilla yet? If not, are you for Rilla? See what I did there? Rilla is the leading speech analytics software for the trades. It is on a mission to bring physical ride-alongs to an end. You can coach your reps with virtual ride-alongs now. They're 100 times better, faster, and much more efficient than the physical ones. All you got to do is use the Killa Rilla. That's R-I-L-L-A, Rilla. Well, I mean, listen, now you're on to number two that's coming, and I'll get into it towards the end a little bit more, but you got another book coming out. How long has that one been in the making?
That one, I actually wrote the original one. My wife and I escaped a hurricane here a few years ago and flew up to Maine and just rented a cabin right on the ocean and ended up writing it relatively quickly. It's been rewritten now 5 times. So obviously my first time through was learning that I'm not a great writer, and it's taken a while to go back and change that. Fortunately, one of my sons is a screenwriter, so he's been able to proofread it for me and redo it and help me out.
Good. Well, I'm excited that we've had actually a decent amount of guests on here that have written books lately and or have written books in general. And I've been reading. If the book is small enough, Jim, I can read it because my attention span only takes me so far.
This would be about an hour and a half, and I tried to spice it up with stories from my life, too.
Yeah, well, stories make everything more interesting, right? Because you can retain the story more. Like, if you put the lesson in the story, it's always easier to retain, I think, at least for guys like me.
Oh, I agree.
So I want to kind of get into just, what you've been doing lately. Like, because it seems like we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but tell me if I'm wrong, but was your last live speaking event back in 2017? It was in Orlando?
Yes.
So you just said, I'm done. I'm like, are you legit like retired?
Well, no.
Because you're the chairman for physical, right?
Physical therapy.
Right.
So in 2012, I started a business that's called Bezoom with the intent to invest in other businesses and then apply the knowledge that I gained. I have a 10-step approach that I've applied to every business I've been in. So not only has it worked in home services, but I own the two restaurants here in Sarasota. One of those just got selected 6 years in a row as the best restaurant in Sarasota.
Nice.
So very, very proud of that. And the other one's a very, it's I think listed number 5 on TripAdvisor. So also does extremely well and did that. Then I also started Physical, which is a physical therapy business. I started that effectively in 2014 by buying into one center here in Sarasota. Today, we are approaching 500 centers in the United States, and we are the third largest physical therapy business in the world. And I'm still chairman of the board. I did in 2018 sell 51% of that company to a private equity group, New Harbor Capital, out of Chicago. So I'm kind of a sit back chairman of the board. I'm not that active. We recruited a very effective CEO who runs the business. And although we took a big chunk of cash off the table in 18, we're now looking at exiting the business sometime this year or next.
Hey, you know what? You really need to learn how to build a business.
if everybody follows my rules, I still work with some business owners, not all of them, home services. So they find me and I'll sit down and spend a day with them and do like a 10-year plan with them. And it is a 10-point system that if you do it, and if you have the will to do what's necessary, I've done a company called the Mutual Fund Store. That business last sold for $850 million, which was a financial advisement business. And we franchised that and helped to make that very successful. So it's worked in restaurants, physical therapy, electrical, plumbing, roofing, HVAC. It's a broad-based business program that works for service businesses.
So I think it's safe to say it's proven.
It has been proven.
It's been proven. So you have your two restaurants in Sarasota. Is that fun? Is that just something that are you a foodie? Was it fun? Or was it just another challenge? What was that all about?
The first one I bought had gone bankrupt like 4 times and I loved their food. So I sought out their chef and said, look, man, I don't think you know how to run a business. I do. But I don't know how to cook, so let's do business together. The partnership didn't work out great, but the business did.
Got it.
And I'm no longer the owner. My son owns one of them, and then Michelle Schlingman, who worked with me for decades, owns the other. Unfortunately, in 2020, right at the beginning of COVID, I was diagnosed with a rather aggressive cancer and had to have a kidney removed.
Oh.
So I sold those businesses during that period of time simply because I wouldn't be able to pay enough attention to them.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize that happened. And are you all? I mean, it's 20. Good for you. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yep.
So, I mean, that might change your perspective a little bit.
Definitely changed my perspective a great deal. So it was an experience that, you know, I went through chemo and then had surgery. So it took a long time, but I'm cancer free for 2 years now.
Good for you. Congratulations. That's awesome. I mean, and I mean, talk about overcoming adversity. That's something I want to get into because everybody goes through it in any business and you've not been like exempt from that either.
Nope.
But is that kind of part of the reason why you've laid low a bit too, is at least in the home services space, like is from my, you know, at least from my perspective, it seems like around that, around that time is when you started kind of like maybe not being at like going out and doing live, you know, speaking engagements anymore and doing things like that. Was that intentional or was that just like kind of what happened from that?
It was, how do I say it? I thought I'd probably done as much as I could do within HVAC and home services. I was still intrigued with applying, will these business methodologies work to other businesses? So before I was done, I kind of wanted to prove that. The restaurants have certainly evidenced that they will both make phenomenal amounts of money. They survived COVID making money.
Which is
so, while other people were folding up their businesses and running, these two restaurants actually accelerated their sales and grew during that period of time. So that certainly evidenced that. And then the fact that we continued to grow our physical franchises and company-owned operations phenomenally during that period of time also indicated that this business methodology holds up to recessions and other challenges.
Well, I mean, to get through COVID in the restaurant business is quite the challenge. I mean, that industry, wow, was impacted so much. I mean, and there's so many that didn't make it through. I mean, so many. So, again, you probably went back to those 10 steps that you rely on.
I must say the PPP program definitely helped restaurants.
Well,
so those who took advantage of it, used it correctly, I think were able to sustain themselves, survive, and then be ready for great growth because they had lesser competition coming out of COVID.
Yeah, good point. Well, and I want to talk a little bit about like this industry, you know, and well, I'm going to call post-COVID. I mean, it's not really post, but you know what I'm talking about. I'll get to that towards the end, but I want to hit on that a little bit more. But first, we were talking about like this overcoming adversity. I didn't know about the cancer thing too, and I'm grateful that you're on the other side of that. But I love good overcoming adversity stories. And you might have one of the best I've heard too. And you kind of mentioned it in the beginning about when you had started Home Energy Services, you missed the phone book cutoff. And that was like the way to pull in business was that phone book. And you didn't miss it. Like you had this long wait to get back to it. So were you a little bit concerned there? Like what happened? You got to share with the listeners how you overcome that adversity. It was like, that story was fantastic.
Yeah, that was quite a challenging time for a couple of reasons. So this was, you know, I started my business in the early 80s, and everybody thinks economically things are bad now, but the U.S. unemployment rate in 1981 was 14%. So a lot of people out of jobs. St. Louis County was number one in the U.S. with over 20% unemployment. And this was the place I moved my family to open up a business of all places. And I'm not in the phone book. So it was like, oh, my God. I'm going to lose everything that I've worked for my whole life. And I've made such a mistake going into business for myself. But I was there. There was nothing I could do except figure out an answer. So I literally walked up and down the streets of St. Louis, knocking on doors, asking if I could serve people, and started to build a business. My grandfather ran a moving business during the Great Depression. And I asked him one time, I said, hey, Gramps, how the heck did you run a business when it was over 25% employment? And he said, I only focused on the 75% of the people that were working, Jim. We helped out our neighbors that needed help, but I kept my eye on the 75% of the people that were working. I used exactly that same foundation. But to get to them, it was either telemarketing or
knocking
on doors. And I could not find people that really wanted to knock on doors until one day I was at home. I tried to make it home for dinner every night before going out and running a lead in the evening. And I was sitting at dinner with my wife and three children, and we're devout Christians, so we were praying at that time and seeking answers. And all of a sudden, somebody's knocking on my door, and I look out, and there's two guys in a shirt and tie, and their bikes are laying in my yard. And the first guy said, sir, we're here to talk to you about God. And I'd just been praying for help, and I said, right. I think you are. Come on in. So I sat down, I said, where can I find guys like you that'll knock on doors? And of course, they were Mormons, so they told me Salt Lake City. So within a week, I'm flying into Salt Lake City, walking around Temple Square, looking for people who come back and knock on doors. One guy took mercy on me and told me I had to go to Happy Valley. And I'm going, where's that? And he said, that's where Brigham Young University is located, and you'll find what you're looking for there. So I drove to Brigham Young University, which is in Provo, Utah.
Right.
And met a kid who said, oh, man, my marketing professor is going to love you. So took me into class, and the guy let me speak to his class, and I recruited 22 young Mormons to come out and knock on doors. And it was like a record. We sold 3,000 service agreements that summer from the Mormons knocking on doors, and my business just took off. The next year, I made $1 million. So it was just unbelievable that I found the answer that way.
$1 million to the bottom, and that was in what year? 80?
That was 1986.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that was 5 years into business, starting a business, from scratch in a very difficult period of time. So, yeah, it was a great deal of money back in the 80s, particularly.
That's thinking outside the box too. And also, like, I'm also a Christian, and I believe those aren't coincidences. I believe those are like that was meant to be how that went down. But it is interesting for, you know, to think outside the box and then actually do it, you know, not just like think about it. And you just getting up and flying straight to Salt Lake City, maybe it was desperation, but maybe you were probably convicted at that point too. Like that was the answer. And and it panned out. I can't even picture you walking around the Temple Square just talking to people.
That was different. That was in Salt Lake City. So I almost went into the temple, which you're not allowed to do.
You're not allowed. Yep. Nope. Well, so I got to know, do you remember at all what you said, what like your opening line was when you'd knock on the door?
Yeah. So I'd knock on a door back in St. Louis and I'd say, hi, my name. I'd step back from the door. I had a little name tag on, always had my booties in my back pocket from the beginning. And I stepped back from the door and I said, hi, my name's Jim Abrams. I'm a local a heating and air conditioning guy here. And I think I could help save you a lot of money on your energy costs. If you let me take a look at your furnace and your air conditioner, I'll give you a quick free evaluation. I'll put a sticker on the side of your furnace that lists 8 different things here that you should do before you ever call for service that could prevent a service call. And if this sticker is on the side of your furnace, when we come out to serve your system, you'll automatically get a 10% discount on any product or service we sell. Also, I'm going to give you my business card with my home phone number because I'm not in the yellow pages. I'm almost impossible to find. But if you call this number day or night, 7 days a week, I'll answer the phone and we'll make sure that we get you taken care of. Can I come in and take a look at your furnace?
This is fantastic. Did you just did the whole thing. I was just looking for the intro.
Hey, man, I did it forever. So I could give you my telemarketing pitch, give you my door pitch. You know, I did this for years of my life.
Oh, my gosh. That was awesome. Thanks for doing that. That was kind of on the fly. Man, you were ready for it. He's a professional. Well,
it just done it.
Well, you know what? Like, also, even though you were convicted with this, you know, flight to Salt Lake City and trying to find, you know, these guys or these, you know, guys to come and knock on doors, I mean, the decision could have went the other way. Like, it might not have panned out. And I don't know what position that would have put you in. But I remember reading an article, and I can't remember which one it was because I've read so many of them on that you had, that you said, make a decision even if it's wrong. Yep. And this is something that I when I read through it more and understood the purpose of you saying it, I would really love for you to share that because I think a lot of our listeners need to hear this from you because sometimes you just got to make a decision. And your analogy on that, well, I thought was spot on. So can you elaborate on what you meant when you said make a decision even if it's wrong?
Well, I'm not sure what I said before, but today what that means to me is that, you know, so many times we get caught into this. What do I do? You know, that in my success formula, knowledge is a critical part. And you can only gain knowledge two ways. You gain knowledge through experience or you gain knowledge through education. So we're hopefully passing on some education here today, but experience simply cannot be replaced. So when you're faced with a challenge that you don't have the knowledge of, how do I overcome this? Do something. You're going to learn. If it's the wrong thing, you'll learn, don't do that again, and you'll learn how to do it better. My new book is actually, the subtitle is The Baby is on the Island. So I ran this thing with management forever that I would tell them, hey, you were on a little spit of land on a river, and just for a few minutes, you left your three-year-old out here because nothing bad was going to happen. But suddenly the river rises and this little spit of land becomes an island. Your three-year-old's out on the island and the water is raging. If you jump in, there's a good possibility you're going to be carried downriver and your child will not be saved. So you need to stop for a minute, take a look at how you're going to go after this, but you must do something or else that child is going to be stranded on that island or you're going to drown. You have to do something. So you have to make a decision. You take all the facts into play and then you make your decision and you do the very best you can.
Yeah. So this, and then there was like the, that makes so much sense because I hadn't known about the naming of the book being The Baby is on the Island. I was trying to understand and I couldn't come up with anything like that made sense to me. That makes sense. I get it. I see the analogy. Well, you had also mentioned too, something along the lines, and I know I'm going to butcher this, but that you'll pick it up, that it's not if you are for sure going to make the wrong decisions, but the percentages, as long as you get the percentages on the upside, you know, that's the one I want you to hit on a little bit. If you remember, yeah, that. It looks Angela like you got Guerrero. It.
Yeah, Angela Guerrero, my very first sales mentor way back when. So prior to Weight Watchers, I was a teacher and then I taught at the college level.
Right.
And ended up as the vice administrator. But the guy that was in charge, Angie, really helped me in life. And he said, look, Jim, if you go to the racetrack every day and bet on a horse, every day, he said, if you're right 51% of the time out of your lifetime, you're going to end up in a very good place. even though you've been wrong 49% of the time. Make a decision. So he was teaching me as a young man how critical it was to act rather than just inact. You know, yep. You can't be inactive in business. Bad things will happen to you. The world will take you down. So you have to be able to act. And many times you're going to be wrong. As long as you're right more than you're wrong, you'll be okay.
Yeah, one more and you lose. Don't kick the can down the road.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So to speak. It's like our federal government. Look at where we're at now with our debt. Everybody's just been kicking the can down the road now for decades.
Right.
And now, unfortunately, our country sees challenges that it's never seen before.
Yep, for sure. Man, I had a lot of those conversations this past weekend.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, you had mentioned, you know, knowledge being part of your success formula. And I'm always curious, and even though this sounds like a cliche question, I'm always genuinely interested in everyone's answers and the differences in the answers or the similarities in the answers. But define success by your own standards. Like, what is success to Jim Abrams?
Well, I go back to those three things, right? So every day I measure my relationship with God frequently throughout the day. So by knowing what I want that relationship to be, it helps guide my decisions each day. And then for my family, community, and friends, you know, that's very important to me too. I just made a note here because I think it's so important to our industry. You know, three of my friends passed away this last year that really contributed to our society. Phil DeRay, who created Successware and totally changed the way business was done there. Larry Thornton, who passed away from COVID, just a phenomenal guy. Known him since he was a technician at an early stage. And then Rick Hutchison.
Right.
Who helped train so many people here. All three of those guys influenced my world and were positive during the period of time that they did that. So friends, family, and community, maintaining those relationships, giving of yourself to those people, giving your money when you can for churches or community or whatever it happened to be. And then lastly, my career, I think my success, particularly in HVAC, most people only measured against guys in their own town. Since I came out of train, it was already a national look. So I wanted to measure myself on a much broader basis. I wanted to measure myself on a national basis and really become one of the preeminent players in that role.
Yeah, you know what that actually makes me think of is you've heard the term or the analogy that you are the median of the circle that you run in or something along those lines. Like what you did is you found yourself a bigger circle.
Yes.
And then measured yourself against that, you know, and just kept. So it seems like to me that was kind of what you did, which was unique at that time.
It was, you know, I tell people all the time, they said, how did you end up taking the first company public? I think I'm the only guy that planned to, you know, and planning is part of my success formula. So sitting down and taking a longer range look. So again, when I work with individuals that own businesses, I always start with, where do you want to be 10 years from now? And forget about how much money you want or how many centers you want. Where do you want to live? What's your lifestyle want to be like? Because again, being a person of deep faith, I know that Jesus gave me a choice to have free choice, even choosing him.
Yep.
So by having free choice, I can be whoever I want to be. I can do whatever I want to do. It has to be real to me. And when I sit down and put it down in 10 years and say, is this who I want to be 10 years from now? Is that a worthy goal? If it is, you'd be surprised how far you surpass it. You said you had, I think, Jimmy Hiller on the show. Jimmy, I remember very clearly from 2015, he attended a 2-week class that I did in St. Petersburg, paid $5,000. There were 20 people in the class. 19 of them went on to build huge businesses, Jimmy being one of them. Jimmy at that time was not in real good shape service-wise. He was doing about $300,000, $400,000 a year and doing most of the rest in new construction.
Right.
He actually left that class with a plan to be at $50 million in sales 10 years out. He put the plan back behind his desk so he could see it every single day. And when I caught up with him, I did catch up with him. It was 2005 when the lessons were. It was 2015 when I caught back up with him. He was at $83 million in sales.
Nice.
And one says, how's that possible? He planned it.
Well, you know, I actually got to do a podcast with Jimmy. Another one of these things too, where it's like, I heard of Jimmy for so long and it just, I can't remember because I went to like 23 different speaking engagements the first half of this year. I can't remember which one I was at, but he did a live podcast with me in the expo hall and I got to hear his story. And it was, I learned so much about him during the podcast in the expo hall that I made him do it again, because there was things I didn't know about him that I wanted to dig deeper into that I thought would make for a better podcast. So I made him do it a second time, and it turned out great. His story is awesome. But yeah, he mentioned that specifically about his plan and like in executing on his plan. You mentioned Rick. What a good dude. I got to spend some time with him at the beginning of the year. He was out here with Dave Geiger and a few, like a small little group of us that got to, Paul Kelly, and what a good guy. Like, what a good dude. These guys were letting me have it, like, you know, because they bust my chops too, and I'll bust their chops, but I'm kind of giving them, asking them, saying, hey, it's been 15 years of doing digital for HVAC, plumbing, electrical guys. Like, here's everything I got. Here's everything I've done. What can I do better? Boy, was that the wrong way to approach that. And so it was like a firing squad. And honestly, it's all good. I love that stuff because it helps make me better. I'm willing to take the heat to say, okay, I see the fix and move on. But Rick literally pours a glass of whiskey for me and goes, brought it over to me. He goes, here you go. How nice. Such a good dude.
He started working with me when he was 18 years old as a technician.
Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a Rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe, and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put. So keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review. And be honest and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you.